as Dorothy, you're invited to listen to KPFK's holiday broadcast of The Wonderful Wizard of Oz this Wednesday, December 24th from 1 to 5 p.m.
This is Ralph Nader, and you're listening to Radio Powered by the People, KPFK, 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM Santa Barbara, and across the globe at kpfk.org.
From the icy cold curves of Angeles Crest to the sunny shores of PCH, this is The Car Show, broadcasting every Saturday from 1 to 2 p.m. here on KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles for over 52 years. It's also available on kpfk.org. Click on archives. You can go back and listen to every single one of these shows dating back to the dawn of the digital age. I am your humble host, Mark Vaughn from AutoWeek.com. Our regular co-host, Michelle, is out this week, still on the road in the Motor City, which leaves Carl and I once again without adult supervision. Carl, we cannot say anything dumb. Oh, I've already introduced you. Let me introduce industry veteran, executive analyst in iccars.com, senior analyst, and also host of the nationally syndicated The Drive with Lauren and Carl radio show. Carl Brower, welcome again.
Hey, you know, don't worry. I'm sure I can stand in for Michelle's level of responsibility and control. Right, Mark? Right?
I've heard you speak, Carl. I don't think so. But neither can I. So we're both at a loss. Today is another special show, and we have a couple of very cool guests here. And I know you know the first one. First, let's introduce car culture legend, known for some of the most compelling designs in hot rodding, designs that have won the coveted America's Most Beautiful Roadster Award a total of 8 times at the Grand National Roadster Show. And also, he has won 4 Riddler Awards at the Detroit Autorama and done unique, groundbreaking custom cars. Too many to mention here. He's worked for so many different entities, car companies, hot rod shops, not to mention the host of the Discovery Channel's Overhauling. Please welcome Chip Foose. Chip, welcome.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Chip, we took him away from Christmas shopping with his family, so appreciate that, Chip. Please offer our apologies for having done that, but you've got a lot to talk about today too. So we also have with us today another guy from a completely different entity. I think everybody who likes cars also likes airplanes, and we really like seeing those water dropping firefighting airplanes drop out of the sky and save our homes. And Colson Aviation has been doing that forever, and we are lucky today to have with us Britt Colson from Colson Aviation. Welcome, Britt.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks for the opportunity to chat today.
All right. And when my house is on fire, I'm calling you guys.
We'll be there.
All right. Today, you guys, two different, you know, from completely disparate areas, you're teaming up for a new project. Who wants to tell me what the project is? Chip or Britt, who wants to talk?
Britt start, and then I'll fill in some gaps.
All right, Britt, what do you have?
Sounds great. Well, Mark, as you mentioned, you know, we have a deep love for aviation as well as a deep love for cars in the automotive side. And, you know, when we look at kind of the car culture in LA, you know, post World War II, a lot of people, you know, great military aviators and mechanics were coming back from war. And they settled down in LA and, you know, were kind of some of the founders of those original hot rods and that original custom car culture down there. And, you know, it's again, a passion that's very close to us. And we operate the Quick Reaction Force, which is a very unique fleet in partnership with Southern California Edison, as well as LA County, Orange County, and Ventura County. And it's a fleet of 365 days a year, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week aircraft that respond to wildfires day and night. And so, you know, we had the program's been going on for many years. We started to see, you know, increased fire activity kind of at the end of last year with the Franklin fire in Malibu. And then obviously the devastation in January with Eaton, Palisades, and, you know, kind of the rest of the 72 fires that were ignited in that very short window of time. And, you know, we you know, grew up in the area. We have people that have lived in the area forever. And we saw that devastation. And we wanted to do something that we could give back to the community that's been so great with supporting us. And again, sharing that same passion, we thought, why don't we try to, you know, have a contest that really highlights the devastation and the loss that happened earlier this year. And, you know, we have an internal car shop that we build very unique one-off vehicles. And then we started to think about, you know, who could we work with that is the best at what they do, that, you know, leads the industry, that, you know, is that Southern California expert. And, you know, we couldn't think of anybody better than Chip. You know, Chip, as you mentioned, he's, you know, award-winning with the vehicles he's built. He's just does an amazing job. And in our view, is the most talented automotive designer in the world. And so we reached out and, you know, we got to know Chip and he was happy to help. And, you know, we've embarked on this journey together to have a contest for people that had been impacted negatively by the wildfires, either at the end of 24, early 25 in the LA area, where they can submit their car as well as their story online. And we'll go and judge those, you know, kind of as a group internally with Chip's involvement. And then we'll also take those down into a short list of vehicles. And then we're going to put those on our social media channels and let people online kind of vote for who will be the final recipient of this contest and this vehicle restoration program.
So it'll be kind of like overhauling, except you pick out somebody whose car was devastated by the recent wildfires.
We will.
Chip, what do you think? Have you ever restored a damaged car?
Yes, I have. But, you know, I can't wait to see what is submitted. And, you know, if it's too far gone, we're going to have to find a different body. But, you know, sometimes you got a fire damage. The car is only about 3 inches tall.
Right. You know, I always see that the aluminum wheels melted on the ground.
Right. Yeah, they get pretty devastated. But when I heard about this project, I thought, you know, Colson Aviation, they also have their shop, which is Colson Automotive. They want to build the car there. But my involvement is I'm going to get involved with whoever's picked to be the winner and we'll design their car. And I'll go up 3 or 4 times up to their shop and help with the build. And I just thought, you know, what I really loved about overhauling was making somebody's dream come true. And unfortunately, in these fires, you know, there was a lot of people's dream cars that got destroyed. So to bring that back and make somebody happy, I'm happy to be a part of that.
When is this still? People can sign up for this now, right? They still have some time to sign up for this, right?
Yeah, January 20th is the deadline to get your submissions in. And you can submit your own car or submit somebody, a friend or somebody. And, you know, we're going to pick a few of them, put them up on the website, and let the people vote for who they believe is most deserving to get their car replaced.
Have you guys reached out to Altadena Cars and Coffee? That is a show on Saturday mornings from 8 to 10 a.m. up in Altadena, just off of Lake Avenue. And it's all kinds of people from that community, many of whom lost their cars. And others have done GoFundMes have been set up for them to buy sort of replacement cars for the cars they lost. Have you guys reached out to them at all yet?
Not that I know of.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not sure that we have, but it is a great idea. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. I go to that every now and then. Maybe I'll tell people.
Cool.
Yeah. If you talk to them, I'm sure you'd get a lot of candidates instantly of, you know, word of mouth that would be happy about this program.
Yeah, just looking through all the news photos, you know, there were 9/11s lost up there and a lot of grand old American classics. So many worthy candidates for this. And boy, what an honor that would be to have Chip Foose redo your car.
Well, I know a lot of my friends that lost vehicles in the fire.
Are they going to sign up?
Well, I've texted most of them to let them know, hey, submit your car and maybe we'll build it.
Okay. How many interests do you have so far?
I'm not picking anybody, so it's up to the public. How many? I'm sorry. How many what?
How many people have signed up, entered the contest?
I don't have that info yet.
Okay.
Do you know, Britt?
I don't. I would have to check with the team. Yep. I'm not sure.
All right. What are you going to look for when you pick the winner of this contest?
The nicest car.
Okay.
I'm kidding. We're looking for something that was fire damaged.
Okay. Yeah, because there were some 356s. And Chip, doing my research for the show, the first car you painted at age 13 was, I believe, was a 356. Is that right?
I was 12 years old, and it was a Speedster, yes.
Very good. And is that car still around?
I have no idea. I don't even know who owned it. That was just a regular customer coming through my dad's shop. And, you know, good thing that we have the possibility. It was a solid color, and we could color sand and rub it and make it, you know, fix all those runs that I got. But it was probably, that car was probably only worth $6,000-$7,000 at that time.
Yeah, back in those days, nobody knew. Yeah. They all should have bought Ferrari GTOs back in 1960, whatever. Yeah. Yes, could be exactly. Rich now.
Yeah, maybe a couple Shelbys.
Britt, how many? How did you decide to get involved in this? I know that there's an entity called Colson Autosports, and what is Colson Autosports, and what has it done, and what does it hope to do?
So I told Chip the first time I talked to him. I mean, I was starstruck because, you know, I grew up with overhauling, and, you know, it was Chip was definitely an icon for, you know, me personally, but, you know, our family overall. You know, our passion is aviation and automotive. And so we have Autosports, and Autosports builds unique cars that, you know, are meaningful in different ways. So, you know, one of the cars that we debuted at the LA Auto Show this year, along with our announcement about the Rise program, was a 53 International cab over. And it was built as a U.S. Navy Martin Mars tribute truck to our Martin Mars flying boat aircraft that operated with the Navy. And that cab over was bought brand new by the company that saved the airplanes from being scrapped out after they were done in their military service. And it had never been registered. It had never been licensed, and it had never left the base. And it was actually used as a crane truck. And so it would move, you know, barrels of oil and landing, like beaching gear and things into the water to support the airplane. And we thought, you know, what a cool truck to build to honor what that airplane is and what it means to us and what it means to aviation. And then we decided to put a 12 V71 Detroit diesel engine in it. And that was actually the engine that came out of our very first logging truck that my grandpa purchased in the 60s. That was the very first logging truck that Dad ever drove when he started in the company. And so, you know, it was very special to us molding the two worlds where, you know, our past of the, you know, conventional logging and the helicopter logging combined with the aviation, which is kind of our business now in the future. And so, you know, it's specialty vehicles like that. It's, you know, aviation team members that work on the aircraft as well that also love cars. So, you know, they're built with passion. They're built with, you know, old school craftsmanship, right? It, you know, it's a very traditional way to build the vehicles. And so that's kind of what Autosports does, is it builds specialty one-of vehicles, you know, to kind of commemorate the time or, you know, what we're looking to do at that point.
Is it Colson Autosports open to customers, or is it just your own collection that you're working on in addition to this contest winner, or what's up with them?
It's internal only.
Internal only. Okay. Did you know that the way that I've heard it is that a tow mater, because you said it was hooked up, set up as a tow or a crane truck, a tow mater was supposed to be an international harvester. I don't know if that's true or not.
I've heard rumors about that.
Chip, have you heard that?
It was based on several different trucks.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, okay. We know you guys have family obligations, but I want to ask each of you a couple of specific questions while we have you on the air. Chip, what can you tell us about the Grand National Roadster Show is coming up in about a month and a half here. What do you know about the cars that are going to be entered in that? Do you have any insight for us on who's going to be doing what at the Grand National Roadster Show this year?
I don't know anything about any of the Sloniker cars or anything that's competing for the Amber Award.
Okay.
But I know that I'm going to bring the Continental that I just had at the SEMA show.
Yeah, I saw that. You had three or four cars at SEMA this year.
Yes, we did. We had a DeSoto, a 56 Chevy, and the Continental.
Okay. So you're not entered in the Amber this year then?
No. Nope.
Okay, so it's going to stay at 9 wins. Was that right? 9 wins in the Amber?
I've actually been involved with 11 cars that have won.
Wow.
And 6 winners of the Riddler, but 4 of those were all built at my shop.
Okay.
Of the Riddler cars. But okay. It goes back to when I was with Boyd. That's where we started winning some of the Amber Award winning cars.
Yep.
And I've worked with other shops designing and helping them to get things finished.
Yep. And I remember the day of the auction at Boyd, there was nobody in the building where your studio was. I don't know if I told you this, and there was nobody there. So I walked upstairs into your studio and I start pulling all the drawers with all these cool drawings. And I'm thinking, it's my duty to posterity to salvage everything. But then I thought, no, I must not. It would be wrong. You know, the angel on one shoulder, the devil on the other. Had you already pulled all the drawings out of there?
I pulled a few things that I really wanted to keep,
okay.
But you know, they were Boyd's property. So I left everything there.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's funny. I'll see auctions every once in a while. I'll go, yeah, that's one that I left at Boyd's.
That's cool. All right. And Britt, as long as we have you here, you fly in, you're yourself, not a pilot, but you fly in a lot of very cool airplanes. From Chinook helicopters with the two rotors going to C-130s. Your company has had 2 of the Mars flying boats. Which of those did you enjoy the most being in up in the air?
Oh, man, that's a tough question. You know, I'll say the Mars was probably the most unique aircraft. You know, it still ran the oldest generation of 3350 Wright Cyclone engines. So, you know, 18 cylinders each, short pipe exhaust, carbureted. They were a gnarly engine. And, you know, we had lots of issues with them. But when they were running nicely, they were burning 8 to 10 gallons of oil per hour. And sitting up, of oil, 800 gallons of avgas an hour.
That's and worse, 800 gallons an hour.
800 gallons an hour.
That's worse than a Mazda.
It is an impressive fuel and oil burn. And so when we're, you know, flying around in those airplanes, you know, just the nostalgia of it, they were designed in the 30s, built in the 40s, and, you know, you felt it. It was a different era of design. And it was the golden age of aviation, you know, the Boeing Clippers, right? Flying at that time was romantic. It wasn't to get from point A to point B. You know, you would dress up and it was a very specialty thing. And you really felt that in those airplanes. It was like nothing else we've ever been on.
Did they have those crawl spaces for somebody to climb out in flight to pour oil in the engines?
They did. So the wings were so thick that you could crawl out to the wing pylon in flight. And each engine held 90 gallons of oil. But, you know, they were designed to go from the West Coast to Hawaii and the Hawaiian Islands. And so they were long flights. Again, a dirty engine, you could burn 10, 15 gallons of oil per hour. So it was routine that they would feather the prop, shut them down in flight, send out the flight mechanics to add oil in the back of the engine, and then restart it again.
Wow.
That's pretty fun.
They were very cool.
I'd be wild if they started doing that on modern commercial flights, huh? Hey, we're going to shut an engine down for a little while, folks. Don't worry about it.
We're going to send a flight attendant out.
Yeah, someone's got to go out and work on the engine while we're up here, but it's okay. Don't worry.
Totally.
We won't interrupt your service. What, and just quickly, because I know your family's probably glowering at you. Why aren't you here? This is Christmas. It's a special time. You're talking about planes and cars. So how much would it cost just for our listeners who are planning their own private air forces to buy a C-130, a used C-130? And could the average Joe do it?
The average Joe could do it if they had the team behind them that would enable it. So, you know, a C-130, you know, with no firefighting tank in it, just, you know, a bare kind of military H model, you know, that's going to run in the $15 to $20 million range. And then, you know, by the time it gets converted, upgraded to the latest avionics to meet all the commercial standards, get the firefighting tank in, you know, it's in the $25 to $30 million range to get ready to go. And they're hard to buy. It's hard to find them.
Well, somebody, you'd have to be pretty rich to do that. Probably you'd have to be like a Chip Foos in order to afford that. $25 million.
Couldn't afford it.
For an airplane.
Mark, you and I'll just go in on one together. If we split it, we'll be fine.
No problem. I'm going to sell my Lancia. I'll trade them straight up.
There you go.
Cry old Lancia.
Pickup would cover that either.
All right, very good. Well, I want to thank you both for coming on once again. Why don't you give people the contact information necessary if they have a car that was destroyed in either the Palisade fire or the Altadena fire? How can they enter this contest to have Chip Foos and Colson Autosports restore that car back to glory? How do people get involved in this?
So they can go to our website, which is rise.colsonaviation.com, and, you know, they can submit pictures, video messages, you know, anything that really helps us understand the story and the meaning of the car to them.
Okay, very good. And Chip, are you going to, when's the next time the public can see you? Are you going to be signing autographs at the Roadster Show, or are you just hanging out, or what's your plan?
No, we'll have the Continental there. And right. Then we're also going to have the my merchandise trailer, and I'll be signing autographs there and with the show.
Very good. And the Grand National Roadster Show is January 30th to February 1st. We're going to have John Buck on at a later date, and he'll talk more about that. But in the meantime, we want to thank our special guests, the great Chip Foos and Britt Colson, who are putting together a contest where somebody who lost their car to the fires can have it rebuilt by this very impressive sounding team. So thank you both for coming on. And Chip, looking forward to seeing you at the Grand National Roadshow. So Britt, I am looking forward to my flight in a C-130, and you have guaranteed I will not throw up, right?
I can't guarantee it, but, you know, at least when it happens, it's all video recorded, so you'll never forget it.
Thank you. Post it on social media. All right. We're going to cut you both loose, and we're going to get back onto the regular show here. So thank you, Chip and Britt. Goodbye to you.
Merry Christmas, everybody.
Thanks, Merry guys. Christmas. There we go. All right. Now it's Carl and I. Carl, I don't think we are anywhere near as interesting as those two.
This is going to be a tough carrier for the rest of the show with just the two of us. But
we'll get a tough act to follow for sure.
You mean you haven't won the Riddler Award multiple times, Mark? Come on, guys. Get on.
I didn't know that he had won it that many times. He's won the Riddler 6 times and the Amber 11 times. Nobody's even close to that. And you know, it's kind of interesting because people would say that Boyd Connington won it 6 times, for instance. But, you know, Boyd, of course, was really good at assembling a team that could put together something like this. And among those people that he put together was, of course, Chip Foos. But then Chip just before and after that was working on a whole bunch of projects all the time, and 11 times winning the Amber and 6 times winning the Riddler. I think that's never going to be surpassed. He's not done yet.
He's the Tom Brady of street rod, you know, customizing. I think, you know, there's just, you know, and it's, I didn't want to get into like nostalgia and all and have make him admit that he has no memory of me, but I sat next to Chip once, I believe it was during a SEMA show. There was like some manufacturer sponsored trip. I'm not going to remember. I've been on too many, but we were all at like kind of a long table, and somehow I ended up sitting right next to Chip Foos and all. There were a couple like kind of impressive people there. Somehow I got to the table too, and Chip was right next to me, and we had a great conversation while we were there. It was nice. And the other thing is, before that, he was on the cover of, I think it was Rod and Custom magazine in like 1995, I'm going to say. Uh-huh. And I was the editorial assistant at Hot Rod and Rod and Custom. And I don't think he was ever actually in the office. I don't think I would have met him. But I remember like when those pages were being laid out in Blue Lines. Remember, did you ever hear of Blue Lines?
Blue Lines. Yeah. I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. This is all, you know, stuff when people read off dead trees. And, but I just remember him being on the cover, and it was he and Boyd Coddington, and they were like, I think they're standing next to some car or something like that. Or maybe the cover had the finished car and they were standing next to each other in one of the inside shots. But yeah, I first knew of Chip Foose 30, give or take, years ago when he was doing that stuff as Boyd Coddington's kind of, you know, rising star, his protege, as Boyd Coddington's protege.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a heck of a nice guy too. Chip is.
Yeah.
When you see him at car shows, and people come up to him. I this is probably a good way, if we ever get famous, to keep in mind, a good way to not go insane by being famous. Like, people come up to him and start saying, "Oh, you're so wonderful. I love everything." And he just right away says, "Oh, well, what are you working on?" And he gets them talking about themselves instead of talking about him. And it's much more survivable as a famous person. And he's just really good at that. I was impressed.
But, no, he's a great guy. And obviously he was willing to come on the show and spend 20 minutes, when he should be out enjoying his Christmas holiday. So,
yeah, he just got back from Christmas shopping with his family and came right into the house and started talking to us. So we thank him, Chip Foose, and look for him at the Grand National Roadster Show coming up January 30th to February 1st. Do we have any other calendar items, or are we just, we were bowled over by the presence of those two guests.
Yeah, let's see. Is there anything else that we've got here?
What else is coming up? Retromobile in Paris. If you want to fly to Paris, I'm going to be there on January 28th and 29th. I'll be there. And the show, it starts on a Thursday and runs through that Sunday in the city of Paris. It's just, in my mind, I've built it up into this wonderful event. And so I'm going to be over there for another press trip, and I'm going to stick around and fly out of Paris. So I'm going to go see that. That is coming up. If anybody wants to fly.
You've done that before, right? You've been to Retromobile before?
I have never. I've covered it many years, but I always cover it just remotely. And so,
yeah, I've heard you talking about it for years. I assumed you. So this is the time you're going to actually physically.
I'm going to actually be there. And there was another event like that called Chantilly, as we say here. And it's a Concours that is of the old school Concours. Remember, the French invented the Concours. So just north of Paris is a chateau, which we would call a castle, called Chantilly. And they have a wonderful show there every year. And I finally went to that last year. That was great. That was a lot of fun.
Well, so, I hope you enjoy Retromobile as much as your anticipation of going must be high. So it's got that hero's got a lot to live up to when you meet it, but hopefully it will.
Yes, indeed. And I'm looking through here to see, oh yeah, here's a couple other events coming up. Bert B.S. Levy, the great sports car writing, he writes books, and he will be at Autobooks Aero Books Saturday, December 23rd from 11 to 3, he will be, as he says, schmoozing, telling stories, and signing copies of the 7 books that make up the Last Open Road series. He's a legend down at the Sinclair gas station. Now, if you've read any of his books, you know about the Sinclair gas station. The address of Auto Books, Aero Books, is 2900 West Magnolia Boulevard in Burbank, California. You can call them at 818-845-0707. It's a great bookstore, and you can meet Bert B.S. Levy. He is are you familiar with his books?
I've heard the name, but I've not read a book.
He sort of tells the story of sports car racing in Southern California in the 50s and 60s. So the dawn of the great sports car racing, that a scene that spawned, you know, Phil Hill and Carroll Shelby and just innumerable other guys. So he sort of fictionalizes it and tells the story of a guy who goes through all that. And it's really cool. And he is quite the raconteur, I have heard. I don't think I've ever met him, but I might head down there Saturday, December 27th, to Autobooks Aerobooks to meet Bert B.S. Levy on Saturday, December 27th from 11 to 3. Another fun event that's coming up, the Horseless Carriage Club Holiday Motoring Excursion, is taking place the next day, Sunday, December 28th, from 7:30 to 9:30 at Arcadia Regional Park, 405 South Santa Anita Avenue in Arcadia, California. If you want to check out their website, it is SoCalHCCA.com/holiday-motor-excursion. That's a mouthful. This is not like Indy or the Indy 500. This is a long name, but it started out being cars that were of the brass era and around that time. And they realized that those cars were getting fewer and farther between, and the owners of those cars were getting fewer and farther between. This is the 70th running of this event, so it's been going on for a long time. And now I believe that they welcome cars from 1932 or earlier on this rally. And before the rally, they all sort of gather together at Arcadia Regional Park from 7:30 to 9:30. And you can just walk around and see all the cars that are going to be in the rally. And then if you're very clever, you can they don't give out the route of the rally. That's only to people who are entered in it. But you can be clever and follow along and see where they go and watch the cars in action driving all over Southern California. It's a lot of fun. That's Sunday, December 28th from 7:30 to 9:30 at Arcadia Regional Park. And let's see, one more thing since we're still doing this. I think three things make up a calendar section, don't you?
Sure.
In July of 2026, the Dan Gurney Eagle and AAR reunion will be taking place at Road America, July 16th to 19th. That's all the information we have on that. So
nice.
We'll see what happens. All right. That's what we have. But right now, Carl is going to tell us, as we know, Carl is a senior analyst at iccars.com. And they just came out. This is our segue into the news section. They just came out with some new information. Carl, what's going on?
Yeah, so there are cars that are about to become another year old. You know, we live in a world that has this calendar system, as you may know, Mark. And so every year, cars that already exist get a year older. And if you buy a 26 car, you kind of actually shot forward in time because it's not 2026 yet and you've already got one in your driveway. But the converse is true too, which is if you've got a 2025 car and you're a dealer and it's sitting on your lot, that car is about to enter what I think is kindly called leftover status, right? Why didn't that car sell before the end of the calendar year? And we looked at all the cars that are sitting on lots right now, dealer lots, and how many of them were not only 25 models, but 24 models. These things are about to be leftovers, you know, twice removed, whatever you want to say, you know? And we looked up these vehicles that we feel like were at the end of the year. You know, dealers want to hit their numbers at the end of the month, the end of the quarter, and the end of the year. Well, all three of those things happen on December 31st, not too far from now. And if you want to pile on top of that, and on December 31st, the 25 cars, the 2025 model year cars are going to look like they're about to become leftovers for those dealers, and the 2024 model year cars, and those are out there too, 0 miles or sub, you know, 50 mile new quote unquote 2024 models. They're about to be 2 years old on December 31st. So this is how you get a better deal on a new car, quote unquote, maybe new car if it's a 24 or 25 model, but they're still unregistered with a private individual. They're still sitting on dealer lots. Nobody's owned them yet. You're going to get the full warranty and it's going to start the day you buy the car with the low miles. So that's what we did. We looked at those and it doesn't reflect very well on Stellantis, unfortunately, because when we looked at the models with the most leftovers, the Dodge Hornet plug-in hybrid was the number one vehicle with the most 2024 in inventory left over. Now, just so you know, of all the models out there, the number of 2024s that are on lots is across all models 0.4%. In other words, there's almost none. That's the average across all like 300 plus models sold in this country. 0.4% of them are 2024 models on dealer lots. The Dodge Hornet plug-in hybrid is 82.1%. 2024 models that are in inventory right now, 82.1% of them are 2024.
What is wrong with the Dodge Hornet?
Apparently something to keep people from buying. And it's a good question. You know, I have a Chrysler dealership here that has all the brands close to me down here in Orange County. And I was there asking the gentleman, one of the sales guys, probably 2 years ago when these cars were new, so how are those Hornets doing? And he looked at me and said they should have made them a Chrysler. And he's right, because Chrysler doesn't have hardly any models, and the Hornet should have been a Chrysler. It would have sold much better. So because the Dodge buyer base, they're just not into Hornets like a Chrysler buyer might have been. So that's 82.1% for the Hornet, number one. Number two is the Jeep Grand Cherokee. Again, these are 2024 Jeep Grand Cherokees that they make up 70.8%.
Because you would think that everybody's crazy for SUVs. And
yeah,
it's been sitting there. That you're just wasting away on dealer lots.
Yeah. And then the next one is the Alfa Romeo Tonale Hybrid at 46.8%. And then finally,
sure, that's an Alfa. That's a fun car. It's not a bad looking for an SUV.
Yeah, no, those are very cool cars in my mind. And then the Chevy Malibu is 31%, and the Dodge Hornet non-plug-in hybrid is 26.3%. So yes, the Dodge Hornet, when you break them apart by hybrid or plug-in hybrid or not, they get to be in the list twice in the first five. And then number six is the Grand Wagoneer L. So five of the six most leftover 2024 models are from the Stellantis brand.
Stellantis, what is wrong with you, man?
Yeah.
Get it together.
And just for curiosity, just so people know, number seven is the Genesis GV60, which is an electric car. So I think those kind of can struggle sometimes. And then number eight, speaking of electric cars struggling, is the Dodge Charger, the 24 Dodge Charger, which again is the electric one that a lot of people weren't happy
about. Now, have you driven that? Because I've never driven that. Have you driven it?
I have driven. I was at the press launch and I drove it. And of course, I know people at Edmunds.com, friends there, and they have a long-term one. So I know plenty about that car.
What can you tell us about that?
So it, I think, looks extremely good. And of course, remember, you can now get an internal combustion, the Hurricane straight six is in it. So you don't have to go EV if you want that new Charger style. And I think it's very attractive. It's heavy, not surprisingly. It's an electric car. It has the Fratsonic exhaust, which is, you know,
that's the fake sound.
Yes. The attempt to give it personality through fake sound, which I have a massive, personal issue, with that concept. You know, to me, that's like someone who watches high definition TV and they're not comfortable with not having like kind of, you know, fuzzy edges and pixelation going on and stuff. And so they're like, could you somehow tone down this 4K, turn it back into like 500 or 300K, 300 lines of resolution so that I can actually see the edges. It's like, look, you've got electric. Electric cars don't have anything exploding underneath the hood, okay? You have to either commit to an electric car and have no exhaust note or go back and get an internal combustion car. Please do not look like some weird old fart who cannot, you know, cross over into an electric car.
It was about a year or two ago that I think it was Borla put for the Mustang Mach-E, they would put a speaker in the wheel well to make it sound like a big V8 with a great Borla exhaust in it. Remember that?
Yeah. Yeah.
I never heard anything more about that. It sounded nice.
I just don't like the idea. Why are you hanging on to the past? Either you're going to move forward and drive an electric car or don't move forward and drive an internal combustion car. What are you doing?
What was it like to drive, though? Was it quick off the line and fun to drive?
It was fast. So you know what I'll never forget is that they had a drift thing set up. Oh. And you were supposed to like drift the car.
Yeah.
And it had, you know, and the guy was trying to get me to do it. And I finally sort of got it to do it, but it took a lot of work.
Oh.
And I asked him, I said, what's the deal? Why is it so hard to drift this car? And he was like, because it weighs, you know, like so much, you know, it's got fairly fat tires and a lot of weight jamming that rubber onto the ground, and the ability to get it to go sideways was you had to like go hard, you know, go right and left. You kind of had to rock it back and forth before you could get the back end to slide out. And I'm sitting there thinking, you know, I got a Dodge Demon at home and I can't not drift it. You know, if I go more than like a quarter throttle on that thing at below 40 miles an hour, the back end, if I turned off, you know, traction control, I die in a few seconds. Instead, I never turn it off. And I just am constantly aware of it and interceding to keep me from dying. And so I'm like, you know, why is this electric car with instant torque? And it's just the way it's laid out and all. It was very hard to drift the car. So
it has ground hugging weight.
Yes, it does. It has anti-drifting weight to keep you from ever sliding sideways in it, which is probably not what a lot of muscle car Dodge Charger people want. Probably they probably want the opposite of that. So
okay. Well, good study. A lot of 2024s, and I assume you could get a great deal on those, right?
That's the idea. So the idea would be is that you find a dealership. Hopefully you don't have to go too far from your house, but if it's worth it, maybe it's worth it going farther. But you just start searching, and you know, you go to a site, all the car sites, including IC Cars does this. You pick like the radius you're willing to search in, and you can pick model year and all these other things and miles and price. So just, it's very easy to set this up on these modern car search sites. Like IC Cars, you would just go in and say, I want a 24 model, 24 to 24 in the dropdown. And then you would say, I want, you know, less than 100 miles. And then you would pick your radius. And if you try 50, you know, in LA, you're going to have a bunch of markets, you know, you're going to kind of be reaching down to San Diego and up through North LA County, might find a couple 24s. And then if you have to go out 200, 300 miles, but if you can find a 24 model car that still has under 100 miles and essentially a brand new car at a dealer lot at the end of 25, you should probably be able to maybe make some aggressive price offers to that dealer.
Right, and get that, following up on what you said earlier about the best time. Well, I guess the best day to buy a car is MLK day, but also like New Year's, what is it? New Year's Eve,
second best day was New Year's Eve / New Year's Eve day. They tied. And that's because that end of year stuff and the dealers wanting to hit their numbers. That's why they offer more aggressive pricing. Right. So, yeah.
All right. Good. Well, thank you for that update on the latest iccars.com information. I want to share something that I had a personal experience with. Nissan has this new audio system. I don't know if you've heard about this, Carl. I think it's called Personalized Audio. And what they do is no two people hear alike. It's very interesting. Hearing is not quite like a fingerprint, but your ability to hear different tones is different in different people. Now, old guys like me, not young guys like Carl, but old guys, they don't hear up in the upper ranges as well. So, here's a couple of stats that I dug up. Do you know how many? No, I'm not even going to read these. It's too stupid. Okay, I'll read them. A tuna fish hears between 50 hertz and 11 kilohertz. Did you know that?
No, I was unaware.
The best hearing out there, at least on this list that I saw, the beluga whale can hear between 1 kilohertz and 123 kilohertz. We humans hear between 20 and 20,000 hertz. So 20,000 hertz would be 20 kilohertz. So we have a pretty wide range of hearing, but not every single part of that spectrum is good in everybody. So Nissan has this system. It's an app. It's part of Google built in, and you tap the app thing and then the personalized audio pops up and it actually runs a test of your hearing. You sit there and you tap there. There are 10 different, I don't know what you would call them, ranges, levels, hertz,
scales, sound scales, something like that.
And 10 different ones. You tap the first one and you listen. And when you hear it, you tap the button and then it comes up with the second one and you tap when you hear it. And what it does is it charts a graph of your personalized hearing in the car. And it's just amazing. So you do that and then you listen to a song with your personalized hearing set up in the audio system and you hit a button and it goes back to whatever the baseline was. And it's incredible. The sound is so much more full and rich if you've done this audio system. Now, the personalized test, a personalized audio, and it's available in Nissans and Infinities with Google built in. But I got to think that if the car that you have also has Google built in, I think this personalized audio test might also be available in that. But I thought that was just, I was bowled over by that. I thought that was really cool, and it really works. So it's worth actually going down to a Nissan dealer and just sitting in a Nissan Leaf and just doing the test, you know, and then say, oh, I can't buy the car, but I just wanted to hear the sound.
So now you realize where my mind goes. Just you know, I don't know if you did many comparison tests as an automotive journalist, Mark, I'm betting you did, but you know, where you got multiple journalists out and you're each swapping cars and you kind of drive the same loop, swap cars, drive the same loop. And you know, the trick or the prank or the being a jerk, I'll use that word, that was common on those is that, for instance, if it's like a hot summer day while you're doing that, you hit the seat heater on your car as you're getting out and you see how long it takes for the next person to realize that the seat heater's on and all like that. So in the case of this, it would be you get in the Nissan and you'd run the test, but you'd hit those like scale things when it's saying hit, you know, press this when you hear things, you'd do it all screwy, you know, like you'd hit it long before you heard it, or you'd hit it after you heard it.
That is diabolical.
And then you'd let the next guy drive it and he'd be like, man, this sound audio system's down.
No, I did not do that, and I would not do that for anybody who may be on a multi-car test with me in the future. Just be aware. Just remember that was Carl Brower who set that up. So, and it's Carl Brower who tested the Lobo. What is a Lobo?
It's a sheriff that is always after, you know, BJ and the Bear, trying to get
it. Will the wolf survive? That was the big hit by, was it Lobo? Am I getting that wrong? The LA band, they have
LA band Lobo. There's also a movie that was one of the examples of why Shelley Long should have never left Cheers, but she starred in a movie called it was called Don't Tell Her It's Me, and also the something boyfriend, the rented something boyfriend. Anyways, the character's name was Lobo in the movie. So these are the things I think about when I...
We don't have Michelle here to keep us on track. So we're wandering all over the place.
There's the rails over there, Mark. I think I see him over there.
But Carl's going to tell us about the Lobo.
Yeah, so the Ford Maverick Lobo, that's L-O-B-O. And it is a specific trim within the Maverick model line that is essentially supposed to be kind of like a sport truck, which going back to my, you know, Paleolithic era in my career when I was at Hot Rod editorial assistant, Sport Truck was one of the other magazines that was right down the hall for me. And you know, the idea would be that you would lower the truck and you would put on maybe bigger wheels and you would maybe mod the suspension and the exhaust sound and all do all these things to make the truck kind of more street savvy or customized and all that. And that's kind of what this is. It's a almost like a factory customized version of the Maverick. It's 1.1 inches lower up front, I think a half an inch lower in the rear. It's got specific wheels. It's got a retuned suspension. It's got torque vectoring all-wheel drive. And it's even got a specific mode, driver mode, called Lobo. So all the other Mavericks have, you know, sport and normal and eco and slippery. And this has got all those plus Lobo.
What does Lobo do?
Well, so Lobo... it says when you hit it, by the way, for off highway use only, you know, like you're not supposed to use it on public roads, and it's essentially supposed to let the thing drift more. So like it's supposed to let it get sideways and kind of help you drift the thing and all that. So
sounds like fun.
And I'm sure no Maverick Lobo owner has ever put it in that mode and tried to play with drifting on public roads. Of course,
front engine, rear drive with nothing in the bed. It's predetermined that it's going to drift, right?
Yeah. Well, it's not rear drive. It's all wheel drive. Remember, it's a front drive based thing, but it does have torque vectoring all wheel drive. And if you put it in Lobo mode, I've got a guess on where that torque vectors more aggressively, which would be to the rear wheels.
Right.
And so, you know, there's a lot to like about the vehicle. It's got specific exterior styling elements and interior styling elements. And it's 250 horse, 277 pound foot, 2 liter turbocharged EcoBoost Ford engine. And it's interesting too, it's got paddle shifters, and most of those Mavericks have an 8-speed automatic, and this one's got a 7-speed. And I wasn't sure what that meant. I should probably call the Ford folks to confirm, but I was trying to do some research online, and it sounded like they locked out like the second gear somehow. They removed one of the gears in the transmission, so like it holds first gear longer or something. I don't know. But it's fun to drive. There is only one issue with the Lobo, and that is that it starts at over $42,000. Now,
wow.
I don't know if you remember, but when the Maverick first came out, it was $18,000-something for the base model, and even a loaded up, I think the base model back then was the non-hybrid, and then the hybrid was or maybe the hybrid was the base. I don't know. I remember they've switched that since then too. But anyways, if you got a loaded Maverick in 22 when that model first hit the market, you'd have trouble making a cost, I think, of more than $25,000, $26,000. Well, that was a great deal. The market recognized it was a great deal. The lineup of people buying them was long and the demand was long and they were selling out. And you know what happens when most companies realize, hey, I think we underpriced this thing. Look how many people are buying it. What's the first move they do? That's right. They lower the price for it. No, they go the other way. And so, of course, the price of the thing has been going up anyways, non-Lobo versions. But now this Lobo version here, when I think about the first Maverick, first year Maverick base model being 18, and this one's with no options too, being over $42,000, I was just like, I mean, it comes out.
It was supposed to be, the Lobo's a particular model. But that was supposed to be the affordable pickup truck that was going to, you know, bring Ford. Well, they don't, it's not like they're coming back. They're already leading the pickup truck segment. But that's a bit of a price hike.
Yeah. And I mean, one of those things that's like, they're going to sell, most of them aren't going to be Lobos, and I need to go confirm, but I think the price of a Maverick is still, you know, you can certainly get ones in like low 30s and stuff like that, and high 20s, low 30s. So you certainly don't have to buy a Lobo version. And who knows how many of these they need to sell to justify the engineering that went into making that specific trim. But I'm just like, you know, you can start getting like Tacomas and like Ridgelines. You can get mid-sized trucks. This is a compact truck. That and the Hyundai Santa Cruz are the only, you know, kind of official compact trucks now, below a segment and size below mid-size, like Canyons and Colorados and Tacomas and Frontiers. But you can get a lot of those mid-sized truck models I just mentioned for $42,000, like nice versions of them. So a little pricey.
That is pricey. I drove, and I think you were probably on the same trip, the mid-cycle facelift of the Ford Maverick last summer. 2025 Ford Maverick got a mid-cycle facelift with the new front end and all-wheel drive available in the hybrid model. But as we noted then, the price went up 30% since its 2021 debut. So it's not just the Lobo that went up. It was the whole thing. Now, the cheapest model, according to this story that I wrote way back in, I'll tell you the exact month, April 8th, 2025. The cheapest model is the XL for $28,590, which is a big step up from when it launched in 2021, that price was $21,490. So, you know, they're making money. So why not sell them all?
Was it that?
Yep.
I thought you could get ones for like high teens. I thought 18 or 19 would get you a base Maverick its first year. Is that not true? Was it always 21,000?
It's not true according to my story, but you know, who's to say who's, you know.
Okay. Either way, 18 to 28 or 21 to 28. That's a big jump in percentage-wise in price.
It is a big jump. And you've got a 4.5-foot bed. So, you know, remember back in the 70s, those mini pickups, they all had bigger beds that you could actually use, but they only had the single cab. So nobody wants a single cab.
Yeah, and you can make the argument. It's like, so, you know, is this thing a sport compact car? Because it now costs more than a 300-horsepower Toyota Corolla GR, which, you know, has all-wheel drive also and 300 horsepower and some functionality with the hatchback design. And those things are like 39,000. It's like, well, no, it's a truck. Okay. So what are you loading into this truck? You know, how much heavy stuff are you carrying in this truck? And also the Lobo drops the payload, I think, from 1500 to 1000, and the tow capacity is worse too. Like the regular Mavericks, 2000 or 4,000 with a package. And I think it's 1500 in the Lobo.
Okay. So, it's a handsome looking truck though.
It looks good and it drives good and it has cool care. There's nothing wrong with it except arguably the price, but that's just me.
Okay. Well, speaking of price, I also drove in the last week. While you were driving Lobos, I was driving Mercedes-Benzes, specifically the CLA EV, and it starts at $48,500. Now the CLA, of course, is now, I don't know. I guess you could say it was the entry level because they don't sell the A class over here. So the CLA EV, an electric car with an EPA range of 374 miles. That's EPA range of 374.
That's impressive. That's impressive.
Our friends over at Edmunds, they got a range of like over 400 miles with it. Let me see if I can find that exact figure that they got. Okay, EPA is 374. Edmunds got 434 miles on their real-world test loop.
Damn.
And the European WLTP test officially returned 492 miles of range. This is all from an 85 kilowatt hour battery. So it's a big battery, but it's a small package. The
battery isn't even that big. There's cars out there with 100 plus kilowatt hour batteries. It's not like it's the biggest battery out there in the
right.
Electric
oh yeah. Power. But I think so. for unit size, you know, per
sure.
Per size, like the Lucid Air has what 120 kilowatt hours, but it's a much bigger car.
Right.
And that'll go over 500 miles. But this is an impressive just on the spec sheet. Now, with the one I drove was the CLA 250 Plus, I think was the name of it. It has a single rear electric motor making 268 horsepower. Now, the whole thing weighs 4,553 pounds. But you would think that that would just be kind of heavy and like a slug. But they introduced it up in San Francisco and we drove it over the Golden Gate Bridge and on that really twisty road to Stinson Beach. So these are turns that would be second and third gear turns on a motorcycle or a sports car or something. And it really felt good. I expected it to not feel good. I don't know. I just thought it would be heavy and I don't know, but it felt good and it didn't have any of the, when you drive an AMG, when I drive a big, heavy AMG, you've got the active roll bars and the active suspension kind of wrestling the car into line.
Yeah.
And, yeah. I enjoyed it.
I'm impressed. There's a couple of ways to think about it. First of all, the Nissan Leaf, the newest one that just came out, that's on the North American Car of the Year finalist or SUV of the year. That's a roughly $30,000 starting price and it gets about 300 miles. So if you wanted to say, you know, okay, we need to kind of have a tie-in between what you're paying and how far you're going. If that car starts at 48 and it's rated at 370 something, but Edmunds is getting 430 and
right.
European standard, which is always a little easier. We always know that they get a little further because of how they test them. Those Europeans are so much slower than us. They're getting 490. Still, that's approaching that same thing where, you know, the MSRP and the miles is kind of, you know, a multiple of and all. That's not terrible. And 4,500 pounds, sadly, is actually pretty light for a 2025 anything. I'm just abhorred by the weight of modern cars in general. And electric cars tend to be just literal multi-ton vehicles. But as an electric car with that big of a battery and that far of a range to go at 4,500 pounds, there's plenty of internal combustion cars that aren't that large that weigh over 4,000 pounds. You know, I probably shouldn't bring up some of them because I've already done that on this show. But yeah, I'm surprised when you have sports cars, quote unquote, that weigh over 2 tons. So this thing's not that much heavier and it's an SUV officially. So
yeah. And it looks nice. And you know, you can impress the neighbors. A lot of people love impressing people with their Mercedes. And you know, you can do that as well if you want to. We got less than a minute to go on the show here. You can also, I'll just throw out, you can get the all-wheel drive 350 4MATIC with EQ technology, which is how they say electric car, at 48,500.
What's its range with the all-wheel drive?
It's somewhere out there. I don't know. It's probably a little bit less, but we're almost out of time. And I can't be.
You've inspired me to want to request one now. I kind of want to drive one. And see
all right. Like. We are stick around. Come back next week when we will have the great Charles Phoenix on the show and Johnny Lieberman on the same show next week. Stick around for Rhapsody in Black, music that sounds great on your car audio system. And we will see you right back here next week on The Car Show.
Not only are KPFK listeners smart, interesting, and forward-thinking, you're also very generous and deeply appreciated. Thank you so much for pledging your support to KPFK during our fun drive.
Hi, I'm Patti Smith, and you're listening to Fiercely Independent Pacifica Radio, KPFK 90.7 FM. People have the power.
Coming up this week on LA Theater Works.
Yasmin is a Yemeni-American high school senior with big dreams. Dr. Guy Royston is her science teacher with a mysterious past.
Saying things